Hello, folks, and welcome to another edition of the Texans Talk Podcast. I'm Mark Lane, filling in for Anthony Wood on this episode. But, hey, you want to stick around because we're talking to one of the legends in covering Houston NFL football, none other than the general from the Houston Chronicle, the great John McClain. John, thanks for being a friend of the podcast.
It's my pleasure. Mark, how are you?
Doing good, doing good. So, let me ask you this, just how are you doing? How are things there in Harris County?
Well, I'm doing great, working every day, writing podcast, and staying busy. Also trying to follow all the guidelines. I wear a mask when I go into restaurants to get takeout. When I go into stores, grocery store, drug store, I try to do everything experts tell us to do, but there's a lot of morons out there that don't.
That's true. But in terms of just your family and everybody, you've dodged everything so far?
Oh yeah, my wife and I are doing great. I appreciate you asking, and I hope you and your listeners are as well.
Thank you. Yes. So far, so good here. It's exciting news because the NFL actually opens up, well, some teams open up their team facilities on Tuesday, and the Texans are one of those teams that gets to open up. So there are some restrictions, of course. They can only have 50% of their staff there, capped at 75, and the coaches aren't allowed to be in there, but the strength and conditioning staff is allowed to be there, along with players that are receiving rehab. What Texans players would you anticipate that would be going to NRG on Tuesday?
I have no idea, Mark. The bottom line is coaches and players can't go. All teams are in the same boat. The guys have been getting rehab, from what I understand, have been going to rehab. This is not anything new, but until they let the players and the coaches go and start doing on-field instructions, you know, every team's in the same boat. It's going to be really difficult for rookies, and I personally don't see there's any way they'll have four preseason games, training camp. I'll be shocked if they actually can start the season when they say they can, because, you know, Mark, you read the experts, and experts say you keep away from each other. Well, when you're in a huddle, you can do social distancing all you want off the field and meeting rooms, cafeterias, any of that. But when you're on the field and you're in a huddle, you can't be 6 feet from each other calling plays. And when you make a tackle and you're in a pile, guys bleed on each other. They spit on each other. They sweat on each other. And I can't wait to see what kind of guidelines the NFL comes up for that. But I will say this. Because of money, and people got to make money and feed their families, they're going to find a way to play the season. It might not end until the end of February with the Super Bowl in Tampa, just like I think college football, NBA, Major League Baseball, they'll all find a way to play because we're talking about so much money involved, and they'll run the risk of people getting sick with COVID-19 and hope nobody dies. And while they all have to put the food on their table.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up that point about the money involved. Do you think that's why states such as California and New York's began to acquiesce towards sort of, not to get political, but more of a red state philosophy on reopening?
I'll say this, Mark. I pay absolutely no attention to anything a politician says because the only thing they're doing is trying to feather their own nest and that of their party. But I try really hard to keep up with what the experts say. And, you know, our economy is in the worst shape since the Depression. And so people, you know, they got to work. They got to open their businesses. So I understand that. You'd hope that people, the public, would exercise some common sense, but every time I go to pick up food, there's people in there who are not wearing masks and close to the food. And I'm like, geez, what is the matter with you? Even if you're not sick, you could be asymptomatic and spreading it to other people. But, you know, we're a we're a free country, and there's a lot of people don't like being told what to do. And the ones that are hurt by all this, of course, is all the doctors and the nurses and everybody at the hospitals who continue to try to take care of people. So I'm not surprised they've opened countries back up. They have to. There's just no way that our economy can survive with so many people out of work. And hopefully there won't be another outbreak that forces them to close it back down.
Yeah, we could talk about COVID-19 all day because, I mean, it's a pandemic and it's affected the NFL to such a degree. But one thing that it has done is it's forced the teams to have a virtual offseason. How's the virtual offseason going with the Texans?
I did a column on Sunday, Mark, about the 2011 offseason when the owners locked out the players for 132 days. Because of the negotiations for a new collective bargaining agreement compared to today. The bottom line is in neither year could the players report to the facility. And the difference is in 2011, the players could work out on their own. And led by quarterback Matt Schaub, center Chris Myers, the Texans had player-led OTAs at Rice Stadium. And I talked to T.J. Yates, Texans assistant quarterbacks coach, who was rookie quarterback that year, about what that was like, not just for the players, but for a rookie, right after the draft, moved to Houston and was working out with his new teammates. As opposed to today, they couldn't talk to the coaches, couldn't talk to anybody from the team, as opposed to today. They can't go to the facility, and they can't work out, but they can talk to their coaches anytime. And TJ was talking about the IT people. The IT people, the teams are doing a tremendous job because they've had to set all this up. I'm still amazed that nobody hacked the NFL draft for 3 days because you see that quite a bit. And TJ said they're doing an awesome job, the players are, of learning virtually. But there's no substitute for learning in a classroom and then going out on the field and have a coach show you your mistakes and what you need to do and showing them what you've learned in the classroom. And it's going to be a tough year for rookies, especially the first half of the season. Some positions, like Ross Blackwood, blocked his defensive tackle on second pick. In the second round, first overall pick, you know, he'll go in passing situations and they'll say, shoot the gap. When the ball snaps, get up the field, try to get the quarterback. That's pretty simple. He doesn't have to do a lot of thinking. And I think it's going to be hard for rookies to contribute because all they've had in the offseason are virtual teachings. And I talked to a bunch of former players, Oilers and Texans, and current players about what it would have been like for them, their rookie year, if they'd gone through an offseason program with no on-field coaching. And every one of them said it would have impeded their progress as a rookie. Now, I go back to 2011 when the Texans players tried to be as organized as possible, work as hard as possible, develop camaraderie by playing flag football and golf. And it must have worked out pretty well because they won the division title for the first time. And T.J. Yates, the rookie quarterback, forced to play because of injuries to Schaub. And Matt Leinart quarterbacked the victory at Cincinnati that won the first division title in team history. And then he quarterbacked the playoff victory over Cincinnati, in which the J.J. Watt phenomenon was born when he intercepted Andy Dalton and returned it for a touchdown. So, but it was different when you got to work out. Wade Smith, who was a veteran guard on the Texans team in 2011, said the only way to get in football shape is by playing football. But when you're working out on your own, whether it's like 2011 and you do it with teammates or it's like today you do it on your own, you better make sure when training camp begins that you go and you're in good enough shape to avoid injury. Because if they see you get hurt because you're not in good shape, that's a good way to get in a coach's doghouse.
Exactly, because, I mean, you see it all the time where – a player who gets injured in training camp misses out on all the reps, and then someone supplants them, and then they end up getting IR'd when they have to make that you know, that cut down to 50. It was 53, man, back in the day. But, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up and you wrote a column about that, about how this parallels with the 2011 offseason, because you do see some of the same elements of they can't go to the team facilities, but the players, they can't even really get together themselves without violating CDC guidelines to do so. So, it, you know, just how do you get those reps? How do you build that cohesion? And how do you bring what you learned in the classroom? Because, you know, Bill O'Brien talked about it. They're using Discord. They're having Zoom meetings. But they don't get to take it out onto the gridiron and execute it. It's just mental reps the whole way.
And the good thing about it is nobody has an advantage right now. All of them are in the same boat, even though some states like Texas and Florida easing restrictions. And, you know, as far as they're concerned, I don't think they care if players are back or not, but the NFL does. And until all players and coaches are allowed to report, none are. Now, I think that's going to change. Say California, they get into August and California's still not doing it. Those teams in California and Washington have to seriously be thinking right now, where do we go to train? Where do we go to play? It's possible they're going to have to play somewhere else. One of, like, two teams could play in Las Vegas. They could move one to San Antonio. San Antonio would do a great job. Same thing in baseball. I propose that the Astros reach out to the Dodgers or the A's and say, hey, come share Minute Maid Park with us. Come, we'll share Houston with you. And I think those two teams would not play before they would come share anything with the Astros.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And that's another element is where are these teams going to have training camp? I'm sure you saw it last week. The Associated Press. No, it was everywhere. But the governor of West Virginia said, "Hey, come on to the Greenbrier if you're looking to have training camp." Do you think that that we might see that? At least these teams training in states that have opened back up.
Well, I would sure consider it, because number one, you'd be isolated. Now they can't give you the whole Greenbrier, but they could keep fans away from practice. There's not a lot of fans anyway. And they've hosted 5 training camps, 3 with the Saints and 2 with the Texans. So they know what they're doing. I think that would be a very attractive place. And also, when you're not practicing, it's a great place to be, and you could certainly practice social distancing. The Greenbrier itself, the hotel, the property around there, you could certainly keep people apart. And it wouldn't surprise me at all. The teams in California, they better be making plans, or they're going to be left behind. What I can't understand is about college football. Now, you know these schools are going to find, they're going to find a way to play. And if people get sick, too bad. Hope they don't get too sick and nobody dies, because they got to have the income from football. And the big alums who are also the political big shots, they're going to put pressure on the politicians. And if there's some states, like, say, California, the schools can't play, or certain counties, they're just going to be spit out of luck. And they may play 4 teams in a conference. But I know this about the NFL, Mark. They would rather play 16 games with fans than, say, 10 games with fans. And so the only way I think they're going to be able to do that is to move it back. And they still might not be able. If you open your stadium to 1, you might as well open it to 71,000. And when you do, there's no way you can police them. I see all these things, where you can keep fans certain numbers of seats apart. What are you going to do in the bathroom? Let them go one at a time? Those lines are long enough as it is. What about when they're getting beer? And what are you going to do when they don't do it? And that's the thing. There's a lot of people that are defying the guidelines now, and they do it, and they're flaunting. They're flaunting it, and nobody's doing anything about it, and they're not going to do anything about it. And so I don't know. There's no way I don't see that the Texans can open in Kansas City with fans at Arrowhead Stadium. I don't think we, the media, will be there. I think we'll be watching on TV and doing Zoom call with Bill O'Brien and Deshaun Watson and J.J. Watt afterward. Think about the press box in Arlington and Houston. They're huge. But if you have to put everybody 6 feet apart, there's no way you can get half of them in there. A lot of people are going to have an auxiliary box like the Super Bowl, a separate room somewhere downstairs like the Super Bowl, but you put everybody apart. There's no way those press boxes are going to be used anywhere close to the ordinary circumstances.
Yeah, to be in a press box, folks, even at NRG Stadium, for example, heck, even AT&T Stadium, it's kind of like being on an airline. I mean, it's not that cramped like a sardine, but you could definitely bump elbows with someone.
Yeah, there'd be no food laid out. There'd be no group. And I read the 67-page proposal baseball gave to the union and tried to see how that would work in the NFL, things like no showers. Can you imagine players after a game, no showers? But, hey, they put on their clothes, take off, go home and clean up. They might even wear their uniforms to the stadiums. There's no food. There's no Gatorade thing. Everybody would have their own food, a container with your pregame meal or your postgame meal. You would have your own water bottle, no Gatorade thing to drink out of, and no guys running on the field squirting everybody in the mouth with Gatorade or water or whatever they use now. It'd be really hard for people to adjust in this short a period of time based on it so much that it goes against everything they've ever done.
Yeah, and even if you did have everybody adjusting to stuff that they've done their whole lives, you're still playing out all of these games in the middle of flu season. I mean, let's be honest. The NFL takes place during the cold and flu season, and that's just prime for a coronavirus. So even if they move it back, it's like, you're really getting deeper into the weeds of the cold and flu season.
Great point. Another thing they're talking about is not having any enclosed stadiums. Everything's outdoors. Can you imagine if the Texans have to play all of their games outdoors? How are they going to play in Arizona with the roof open, as hot as it is out there? There's a whole lot of things they got to think about. Maybe there'll be more games played in primetime. The bottom line is, when the NFL announced the schedule, they tried to put on a happy face for everybody, and they have all kinds of contingency plans, and they know it, and they say they'll adjust based on the experts. Something that I thought was very interesting about Major League Baseball, Mark, they say if the guy tests positive, you just pull that guy out. Well, the CDC says if the guy tests positive, you quarantine everybody he comes in contact with. If that was football, it'd have to be everybody on the team because you're in contact with them. Everybody that's in a position meeting goes in the trainer's room. There's just, I don't see how that's going to happen. What would happen is, say on Tuesday, before the Texans open on the Thursday against the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes tested positive. Would a team test him where he couldn't get the results back in time to find out if he had to miss a game? Think how the bookies would go crazy. Think about how everybody took the Chiefs and 10.5 would go crazy. Those are things you have to worry about.
Yeah, and not to, you know, make it the quarantine show, but if they did have a situation like that now, I mean, the advantage just goes to Houston automatically because Mahomes has been out. And don't you remember last year when an illness just, like, swept through the Texans? You had players that got sick. I mean, the illnesses, they happen. And I just don't know how they're going to be able to guard against that. And then one final point. Just imagine the PR nightmare it would be that these NFL players are able to get all of this testing done and all of these tests, but an average worker in an essential job, they can't get the same testing, or they have to pay for it, or it takes days to come back, whereas it's instantaneous for an NFL player.
That would be grossly unfair for athletes to be given that. DeMar Smith, the head of the union, said they would not do that until the public is able to have the same benefits as the players. Athletes are not essential. There's a lot of other people out there that are much more essential than athletes are. And if they're not offered the same kind of testing with a time span on the same results, then, boy, you're right. It's a PR nightmare. Could also be a legal nightmare, too. Somebody said, well, hey, you know, my father got sick and he died because we couldn't get testing, but we watched 150 NFL people get tested 2 days later. We're suing.
Yeah, it just it presents it's all a mess right now, John. So, you know, coaches, they always say we don't get into hypotheticals. Well, I think just talking about the NFL at this point is one big hypothetical. So, let's go ahead and transition to coaching. Anthony Weaver, he spoke with the Houston media last week, and, it was a really great conference call that he had. One takeaway that I had was how much of an influence Rex Ryan had on his career. Do you think that we will see some of the old Rex Ryan defense of, defensive tackles standing up and just crowding around the line of scrimmage? What will Anthony Weaver's defense look like?
Well, first of all, it's going to be a base 3-4, and just like Rex's was. And it depends on the talent. Rex Ryan had great talent in Baltimore. You can't play a scheme and make it work if you don't have the talent. He also learned a lot working with Romeo Crennel all these years, too. So he pointed out he learned a lot from Urban Meyer. So we're not going to know squat about Anthony Weaver until we see them in a regular season game, because he is not going to disclose anything. We'll be talking to offensive coordinator Tim Kelly. I wrote a column for tomorrow about Nick Martin, and Nick was talking about Kelly and how he's known him since the first week he got here when Kelly's assistant offensive line coach, and how much he thinks of him and why he thinks he will be really good at calling plays. But we're not going to know anything until we see them in regular season games, because they're going to be very careful not to show the wrong thing and not to say the wrong thing.
So he's just really got the clamps down. No one's going to know anything.
Yeah, that's the way it is with every coach in the NFL. Whether you're new or veteran, you're not going to know anything right now. If it's Romeo Crennel, sure, we'd have some ideas. We've been watching him all these years. But first-timer like Weaver and Kelly, no way. They're not going to change up the defense. And people acted like Romeo was not real creative. I saw a lot of times Romeo's playing 7 defensive backs. He played 3 linebackers and 1 lineman. That's about as creative as you can get, and he tried to base it on his talent. And last year, the defense just deteriorated down the stretch, ended up being one of the worst in the league. Somehow, they still ended up going to the second round of the playoffs. Carolina and Pittsburgh led the NFL in sacks, and neither one of them made the playoffs. So, yeah, sacks are important to help the coverage, but not necessary to make the playoffs or get to the divisional round, which the Texans proved last year. You can overcome a bad defense by the defense making big plays, but also by a creative, talented quarterback like Deshaun Watson.
The Texans defense had 22 takeaways, tied with Washington for the 15th most in the NFL. Do you think at least the takeaway numbers are going to improve under Weaver?
I think a lot of that depends on situation. If you get ahead of teams and they have to throw the ball, also some of it's luck, tip passes, whether it's a line of scrimmage or ricochets in the secondary, and a lot of it depends on the pass rush. The year before, the Texans were tied for 2nd in plus-minus ratio. They forced a lot of turnovers because they had a pass rush led by Watt and Clowney. They combined for, 25 sacks, 25 and a half sacks, and that helped the defense overall. So if they can get pressure on the quarterback, whether they get sacks or not, that should help get more turnovers. Fumbles to me are more luck than interceptions, but number one, the team's got to throw a ball a lot. The Texans didn't have a lot of big leads.
They were in a lot of shootouts and a lot of close contests. And really, I think that some of it was their secondary was depleted because Jonathan Joseph and Bradley Roby missed time with hamstring injuries. Really, when the Garyon Conley trade happened, the cornerback group for the Texans was just depleted, which kind of forced the trade. Speaking of Garyon Conley, they didn't pick up his fifth-year option, but do you expect him to take a jump in year four?
He played a lot better here than he played in Oakland. Oakland showed him the ultimate disrespect by trading him to a team they were about to play, and he gave up a touchdown pass, but he also broke up two long passes down the sideline. The Texans won because of miraculous play by Watson. So they like Conley. They didn't want to pay him $10 million a year. So most of those guys that don't get their fifth-year options picked up, they're gone. You don't see many of them re-signing with certain teams. So I think this will be the second and last year for Conley and Vernon Hargraves, slot corner. Both of them are first-round picks and really were disappointments in Oakland and Tampa Bay, both of them. And here, as Romeo Crennel said last year, sometimes you just need a change of scenery. You need a different system, different coaches. Sometimes it's just good for you. And it seemed to be good for those guys. They cut Hargraves, and then they re-signed him. But, you know, last year, the worst day they had for corners, they won. It was in Kansas City. Roby went down for several games. They were playing Philip Gaines and Armstrong and Keon Crossan and Patrick Mahomes threw three touchdown passes. They still won the game 31-24. So they've got to be able to stay healthier, not totally healthy, of course. And one reason they were so bad in Kansas City in the playoffs, they didn't have their starting safety, Deshaun Gibson. They didn't have their first safety off the bench, Jahlil Adai. And A.J. Moore doesn't play. They brought Lonnie Johnson, who had lost his starting job, had to try to cover Travis Kelce, and he could not do it because he's not a safety. And so the biggest mystery to me about the offseason so far, Mark, is they cut Gibson, and they did not re-sign Adai, and they didn't draft a safety. I thought sure they would. Right now the starters are Justin Reed, who I think will start to show Pro Bowl potential this season. But Eric Murray has not been a regular starter with Kansas City or Cleveland, but they saw enough in him to pay him starters money. Michael Thomas is a great special teams player. He's not a safety. They have got to sign a veteran safety to come in to provide depth. And I think they got enough numbers at corner, and they fixed their – I don't know if they fixed it, but two of their biggest weaknesses, the pass rush, they addressed in the second and third round with their first two picks. But to me, safety is still an issue.
Yeah, it is an issue. And that's, again, we're missing out on a lot of what goes into the complexion of your roster that you take to camp is because right now, well, I think rookie minicamps would have been over. You're getting ready for OTAs, but you'd still be able to see these guys and how they look, even though it's basketball on grass, as Bill O'Brien calls it. And you'd still be able to figure out who you want to bring into camp or if someone else looked good with another team. But you just there's no churning of that bottom of the roster. I want to go back to what you talked about, though, with the second and third round picks, Ross Blacklock and Jonathan Grenard. It sounded like in Weaver's talk with the Houston media that they like Grenard's versatility. What do they mean by that? Having him stand up and play with his hand in the dirt, or do they mean pass rush and drop back into coverage?
Coaches love the V word, versatility. The biggest mistake they could make is bring in a guy like Grenard and try to make him play different positions. Bring him in. Put him on the strong side opposite Brennan Scarlett, and that's where he'll start. Put him there, and when he gets that down, then let him move around. They're talking about he could play standing up, he could drop down, but in pass rush, he's not hard mentally. It's tough physically, of course, and they have gotten some guys. Xavier Suafilo was the biggest example, second-round pick in 14. tried to make him a tackle. He was not a tackle. They just blew that big time. It was O'Brien's first year. They hampered his development, and then he had that dumb West Coast Pac-10 rule that you can't report to a team till your class graduates, even if you're not in school. So he missed all that off-season program, and he never recovered. And so Grenard will work behind Brent Scarlett to start off, and he is a really smart guy. You know, in his one season at Florida after transferring from Louisville, he led the SEC in sacks, and he led SEC in tackles for loss. But the draft experts didn't rate him high at all. A lot of people thought the Texans reached on him in the third round because they don't think he's quick enough. Well, we'll see. The Texans saw something that they don't see, and there will be no rush. Can't rush rookies because those guys are so far behind. As Bill O'Brien's told us twice, it's going to be a veteran type of year because of what's going on right now, everything being done virtually.
Yeah, and someone else that is trying to come back and may take Renard's reps is Duke Ejiofor. He's coming off that Achilles tear, and he's someone that could, if he's healthy, could provide more depth as an edge rusher.
Duke Ejiofor is behind because he had that torn Achilles tendon in about this time last year. I'll be surprised if he ends up doing anything. Maybe he will, because if they thought a lot of Duke, I don't think they would have used their third-round pick on Jonathan Grenard, another outside linebacker. I'm more interested in Jonathan Martin in his second year with the Texans, third year in the NFL. People laugh when I say this, Mark, but he had more sacks than Clowney did, and he's one of the players that came with Clowney, along with Barkevious Mingo, who was signed by the Giants in free agency, and the third-round pick that went for Gerrion Conley. So Martin had three sacks at the end of his rookie year with the Seahawks. They liked him. He's the fastest front seven player on the team. He runs like a defensive back. He's light in the butt, too light to be a starter at outside linebacker. But he and Charles Omeniu, those are the two that I look, they stay healthy, that'll really step up this year and get in the 5 or 6 sack range right up there behind Whitney Mercilus. And, of course, Texans fans hope J.J. Watt stays healthy. But I don't expect much from Grenard because he's a rookie, but I do on Martin in a minute.
What's the next phase for the NFL reopening and just trying to get back to normal? Because we have the thing Tuesday where employees can come back to the facilities and so forth. But
yeah, that's a long – until the players and coaches are back there. To me, it doesn't matter who's back there. I don't care if there's PR people back there, if there's trainers and there's equipment guys. Until the players and the coaches get back, I don't think it's any big deal at all. And I don't. Eventually, they will be back. We just don't know when. Might be August, might be September. And some teams are going to be behind because of their local restrictions.
Which is why the league, I think one of the last things is you have to report the local changes that your government has made regarding restrictions so that everybody has the same advantage or disadvantage. So, for example, the Texans just aren't ahead of a California team because Texas has had their restrictions lifted.
I wrote a column for Tuesday about Nick Martin talking about having the same system, Bill O'Brien's system, O'Brien being here for 7 years. Tim Kelly's been here the whole time. Anthony Weaver's been here 5 years. And even though they're first-time play callers, they know the players, they know their strengths and weaknesses, and the players know them. And so they've got their system, they've got their coaches, as opposed, and Nick used his brother Zach, the Cowboys guard. He can't report. He's got to do it virtually. And he's got a new head coach, and Mike McCarthy put in a new system. And a coach that's in that I've been talking about for weeks when I have to take one who's at the worst advantage is Matt Rhule in Carolina. Matt's had one season in the NFL as an assistant coach for the Giants under Tom Coughlin. He has first-time coordinators. His defensive coordinator, Philip Snow from Baylor, has been an NFL position coach. And Brady, his offensive coordinator, has not been a coordinator in the NFL. So they have new quarterback Teddy Bridgewater, who new system, new terminology, new head coach. I think that Carolina is going to be right up there in the running for Trevor Lawrence with Jacksonville, Cincinnati, and Washington.
Yeah, that is quite an unlucky hand that they've been dealt. But, you know, if I think that everybody would just be glad to see Carolina have those struggles because it would mean that football's back, you know?
People are very understanding. In 1982, when they had a player strike and they had 9 games and they opened up the playoffs with extra teams, people didn't care. They had 2 playoff teams with losing records. Detroit and Cleveland public didn't care because football was back. So no matter what form it is, whether it's baseball, basketball, or football, people are going to be so happy to have it back, to see it, talk about it, write about it. We can put up with any discrepancies, anything that's perceived unfair. Like some college programs got in their spring workouts, others didn't. So when you're in the same conference, you're going to be way behind that other team. But it's a one-year thing, we hope. And people have to be very understanding and forgiving.
You know, you bring up something, by the way, with your extensive knowledge of Houston NFL football. You were covering the Houston Oilers in 1996, their last year at the Astrodome, and hardly anybody showed up to watch them because they knew that they were going to be leaving town. What? That's probably the closest thing to pro football being played in an empty stadium. What was that like? Because that's probably what fans could hear on TV each Sunday this fall.
The worst crowd they had was 15,000 for Carolina. They also had 50,000 a couple times for the Steelers and the 49ers, and we all expected it because the fans knew the team was gone. But there were still fans, and the ones that are here very vocal and made noise. And the NFL, if they're going to play without fans, they better put some noise out there, because those players say a lot of really dirty words during a game, and those TV, those boom mics down there are going to pick it up like crazy, and I don't think there's a lot of people. And they can't tell the players, hey, no four-letter words, no F-bombs, because when you're killing somebody and they're trying to kill you, you're going to say a lot of nasty things. There's no doubt in my mind they'll have crowd noise put in, not just for the players, but for the people on TV and radio and online as well.
Exactly. That, you know, that's how I see it too. Before I let you go, did you see any of The Last Dance on ESPN on Sunday nights?
Saw every minute of it.
Let me ask you this. What would have happened if the Bulls would have taken on the Rockets, either in the 94 or the 95 finals with Michael?
If you in Houston and you even question the fact that the Bulls may have won 2 more over the Rockets, people here just go ballistic. And they talk about the Rockets' record against the Bulls. They talk about Vernon Maxwell's great defense on Michael Jordan. But I think anybody that saw the Bulls, and if you tried to be, if you're not a Rockets fan, I'm a Rockets fan, but if I'm trying to be fair about it, I don't think they would have beaten the Bulls in the playoffs, because nobody did during that period, as much as I would have liked to have seen it. And I'll say this, Mark, I've seen a lot of great things on TV since I can remember starting watching TV when I was 8 years old in 1960. And O.J., Made in America was great, all of Ken Burns' things, baseball, everything Ken Burns does is great. But I've never seen anything that captivated me as much as The Last Dance did. I think Jason Eyre, the director, the producers, and the editors, they did a fantastic job, and I can't wait to see what their next project is.
It was definitely appointment viewing. And by the way, I am glad that Jordan did retire. I was a Bulls fan growing up. I'm a big Michael Jordan fan, family in Illinois, the whole thing. But I was glad to see that he did retire, because it opened up a platform for the league to finally see how great Hakeem Olajuwon was, and also for Rudy Tomjanovich to get 2 NBA Finals wins. that helps propel him into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame.
And that was great. It was great. It was a great time to be in Houston, great time to be a basketball fan here, but it also deprived us of 2 years of seeing the greatest player in history.
Yep, that's true. Hey, where can folks go to read one of the greatest sports writers in history? I'm talking about you.
Thank you, Mark. My Twitter is McLean, McLain, McLean _on_NFL. Our Chronicle Sports website, Texas Sports Nation, TXXN.com. Everything I write goes on there. And we do podcasts. I do a Friday mailbag. I write 3 columns a week. And do a lot of radio shows here, Nashville, Austin, San Antonio, Waco, Knoxville. I do them every week. And I appreciate you having me on. And I hope you're doing very well, Mark. Stay safe.
All right. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
All right. So there it is.